cannot look anybody else face.
Welcome to the Full Press Packers Pod, part of Full Press Coverage. My name is Kyle Senra, and joining me is my co-host, Jesse Hall. Welcome back, Jesse. We'll be back in rotation here on the Full Press Packers Pod with Jesse. Glad to have you back on.
Hey, glad to be back. I guess it's Happy New Year. It's been a while, but good to be back, and hope you're doing well, Kyle.
I mean, I'm doing better than Eagles fans this week, but not as good as Chiefs fans. I guess last week, Braden Holacek, I know he's really happy. I would say check out the most recent episode of the Full Press Fantasy Pod. We had Braden on, Brad and I, and we just talked about the Super Bowl a lot. And for more detail on my thoughts on some of those topics, you can just refer back to that episode. I'll talk about some of the things here quickly. But Jesse, I'll go to you first. What did you think of Super Bowl 57?
It was amazing. Honestly, you know, I'm sure we're going to talk about the ending, but leading up to the last, you know, minute and a half to 2 minutes, it might have been the most exciting Super Bowl in a long time. I really enjoyed it. It was an awesome game. Two teams with almost identical numbers this year, but they did it in different ways. I thought it was a great game. It was entertaining. It was fun. I'm glad I didn't have a dog in the fight because obviously I would have been looking at it differently. But as a fan from a distance, it was a great game to watch.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think back. Like you said something like the most exciting in a while, and even forget the ending. I'll say it still is one of the most exciting Super Bowls since I don't even know. last time the Eagles were in the Super Bowl, probably that Eagles Patriots game was pretty exciting. Tons of points there too.
Yeah, that's the only one I really can think of where it was competitive. You know, every possession. It was enjoyable. It sure was.
I mean, you could say the Chiefs' first win against the 49ers was kind of it was a classic ending. Like, you know, what did the Chiefs put up, like 21 points in the fourth quarter? Like that was really impressive to watch. But I don't know the whole game lived up to that. Kind of basically like the Chiefs.
Right. You know, every Super Bowl is a different story, right? Yeah. To your point, like that game was just, if I was one of the teams, I would have, you know, had no more nails on my finger or, you know, would have had a heart attack or stroke or something because nobody pulled away. Everything was within distance for both teams. Great coaching all around, especially second half by the Chiefs. Andy Reid's a genius. Just an awesome game.
I don't know that I'm going to go great coaching all around. That's one of my big takeaways there, but I'll touch on that in a bit. But my biggest takeaway was we knew Mahomes was this good. Man, Jalen Hurts really is the guy. And you had it earlier this season, Jesse. We were ranking our top five quarterbacks. I did not have Hurts in mine. You did. And honestly, after this game, it's tough to not put him two or three. Maybe still could say Josh Allen. Although, I mean, Josh Allen hasn't even been to an AFC championship game. So, but yeah, I think there's a, you know, you could add Burrow in there like I think we both did. Lamar Jackson still has these awesome capabilities, but yeah, I think Jalen Hurts has certainly cemented himself among the league's elite quarterbacks. Some of those throws, I think the first touchdown to AJ Brown, that was a deep pass that was perfectly placed, perfectly timed. Any further behind the corner who, you know, Brown's open enough to make that catch, but you throw that pass any bit behind him, it, you know, chance of being intercepted. If you throw it late, I'm pretty sure there's a safety over the top that might have been able to, you know, impact it. Like it was just, it's everything you need in a quarterback throwing. And of course Hurts was incredibly impressive running. The QB power, this is he's a better version, I guess, Cam Newton, right? Like Cam Newton had this kind of like, it's, and that's why I guess the Josh Allen comparison, because I think both, all three of those quarterbacks really do run in a very similar way. Not that they'll always run like seek out contact, but they're so strong that they don't shy away from it. And so, you know, get easy yards, especially, you know, short yardage, straight line is the easiest way as opposed to trying to run to the outside. They'll just power through it, especially with a really good offensive line. I think it's a lot different than how Lamar Jackson or Justin Fields run. Like those guys, it's just, you know, that's pure speed and it's going to be a lot of to the outside. Whereas, you know, Hurts, Allen and what Cam Newton used to do is a lot of, especially near the goal line, getting first downs and touchdowns, the short yardage power quarterback. And that's, Hurts was just all about impressive, really made one mistake, the fumble. And Mahomes was flawless. So they got the Chiefs got the win. I think that's really what it comes down to. I also think there were maybe more to certainly more to blame than Jalen Hurts for the Eagles loss. I thought he was incredible. And just the last thing is the story of this being the first two black quarterbacks to start on both sides. And I think what a showcase for anyone who still had doubts really about either because of the color of their skin. I don't know if there's many Mahomes doubters anymore, but I know Mahomes said after the game too, there really shouldn't be any Jalen Hurts doubters anymore. Anyone who did doubt him, and I could be counted among that, certainly showed that, like, this entire season, really, that he was the guy. Like there's talk of him being potentially replaced. You know, that went away, I think. What did they lose? They were 8-0 before they lost. I think when they were that stretch, when they were that far on without losing, I think that was cemented. Okay, he's their guy. And I mean, they're obviously going to have to pay him big money, and we'll see how that negotiation goes. But you'd imagine, like, okay, he's cemented. But then everything he's done, certainly in the Super Bowl, was just, okay, now he's truly an elite quarterback.
Oh, by far. Yeah. That team was undefeated, and look what happened when he got hurt. That team was a shell of themselves. So that shows what kind of impact he has on that team. And his story's great. Just a great human being. And you know how he got replaced at Bama and he went to Oklahoma. I mean, the kid never gave up. He's a fighter. He does it different than everybody. Like, to your point, the Cam Newton, the power run, it's kind of old school football, but he can beat you both ways. You know, what I like about that team, hey, if it's 3rd and 4, they know it's 2-down territory no matter where they're at. They can get 2 yards on 2 plays, and they're going to do it. It's a fun kind of style of offense that really they're the only team in the league right now that runs it like that. But to your point, too, that throw to A.J. Brown, that's just two studs that are working together because he tracked that ball perfectly, and Hurts put it in a perfect spot where it was not in danger. Now he did throw into double coverage, you know, I think 2 drives later where he got away with one. But even to that point, you know, A.J. Brown's a stud. He trusts him on 50-50 balls. If you doubted that kid, he's definitely top 5. I think I had him number 5. He might be number 4 right now, maybe even number 3, you know, because Jackson just is not healthy. If you're in the tub, it's hard to grade you. Of course, the skill's there. But Jalen Hurts is that guy, man. He's awesome. Philly found him. The second-round pick took a chance on him, and they're not disappointed. They should be happy with the kid they have.
Absolutely. And, I remember which player talked about too, the one he threw into double coverage, the safety over the top. There was tight coverage by the corner. That was maybe the only dangerous throw, because there were so many great throws along the sideline that are perfectly placed, allowing receivers to make plays. Brown, Devontae Smith, and Dallas Goedert all did amazing. And guess what? Zach Pascal and Quez Watkins got to catch passes in the Super Bowl. So good for them. And Jalen Hurts gave them good yardage on them too. So it's good. I really do think, though, I mean, the Eagles' defense, I think, was the certainly. They didn't get a single stop in the second half. That was a major factor. I think it really came down to coaching, and that really, especially on the defensive side. I've heard some people say, "Oh, the fumble was the difference in the game." No. I really think the 2 touchdowns Patrick Mahomes threw in the fourth quarter were the difference in the game. And even like watching it live, I thought, wait, wasn't that the same play they just scored with 3 minutes ago? I know they're the opposite end of the field, different receiver. It was Tony in the first one, Sky Moore, but like the way it structured wide open again, it's like, and then you go back and you look, it's the same offensive and defensive formations, the same type of motion trick to get the, you know, fool the defense to thinking it's motion, but get him outside. No one covers him and it easy walk in touchdown. I thought, okay, you know what? It's tough to make in-game adjustments really quickly. The part of that is got to be on the players too. Like, okay, you know, we saw this earlier. We can't bite on it, you know, but of course, the time you don't bite on it, he actually runs the motion and you lose him there. But I don't know. But so, you know, coaches do have to provide answers for their players. And if you look at the defensive formation, it's tough to have an answer for that. If you're making especially your strong safety commit to having to cover the motion and basically the outside almost. So I get to more details, but I really do think, like, I don't know if it's a scheme flaw. Like, we talked about that with the Packers so much this year, Jesse, right? Like, how often was a linebacker covering the slot receiver? Like, that shouldn't happen. If that's how your defense is run, change the way you run your defense. The way slot receivers are in the NFL now, like, I can get your a linebacker covering a tight end, because most of them aren't Travis Kelce, But to be fair, like you can't really, like you may as well just have a linebacker cover Travis Kelce because none of your DBs will do any better. So may as well commit there. But like for it to be a slot receiver and like, you know, week one, Justin Jefferson in the slot, like that's why is it happening? So, you know, there's flaws to that defense, but it felt like specifically with the way the Eagles lined up as a red zone defense, there's a flaw there that the Chiefs easily exploited and it worked. Both times. Right. And so, you know, got to go to coaching, but I don't know what you, first off, what you thought live and what, like I've, cause I've seen a lot of it made of it since and people showing the formations and kind of explained a bit more. And it really kind of my instinct of man, feel like the Chiefs really like, just like, oh, you're going to do this. We were going to exploit this. And it turned out to be the case. Sorry. I just keep talking over you after asking you, but what do you actually think, Jesse?
No, I'm with you. If you're an X's and O's nerd, like I am, man, the Chiefs adjustments at halftime, and there's a flaw in every defense, so I'm going to piggyback off of that. Every defensive setup is a flaw, and you got to find that mismatch. Now the Eagles didn't come out of that defense when they saw that play, so that's where the coaching got picked on really by Andy Reid and company. But yeah, they went into half, they saw what they're facing, and they came out, they adjusted. Of course the players got to execute, but they put them in positions where I don't care what receivers out there, you and I could have caught those passes because the defense was flawed to what they were doing. And that's just genius. They're like, hey, until you stop it, we're going to keep coming at you with this look. And just handing off that motion guy, they weren't doing it. It's a thing of beauty. It really is. If you're an X's and O's guy and you try to see, okay, if they're lined up like this, how we're going to beat them, they did. I mean, they had the perfect answer to what Philly was going to do. And then if Philly adjusted, I guarantee they had another like wrinkle in that same formation to beat what they were going to do. It was just, they were playing chess in the second half. And yeah, to your point, you know, the coaching, they're playing checkers on Philly's defensive side. So it was awesome. I tip my hat. Chiefs are tough, man. They got the players, they got the staff. They're going to be tough for a long time.
I don't know. Do you watch the Manning cast much? Cause like I despise Buck and Aikman. So like giving me an alternate to them. And so anytime they showed a Manning cast, I would watch Monday Night Football. But I don't know if, have you seen it? Had the privilege?
I have. Yeah, I have. I don't watch it every week, you know, when they're on, but I enjoy them. It's just fun to pick their brains and what they think.
There was a game this year where it's kind of like almost the shocking revelation of the NFL. Apparently halftime adjustments don't exist. Like they like Peyton said it, and like Eli immediately, like this was, it didn't, I don't like, you could maybe think it was a joke, but they were pretty out of it. Like, no, like no, it does. There's no time. You go to the locker room. You know, you take care of what you need fluid wise, whether it's intake or outtake, and get back out there. Like, there's really no time to make adjustments. I, to be honest, I think the smartest coaches are just adjusting every play.
And right. So
you see players ahead on the sideline too. Every time they got the tablet, they're not like, you know, maybe there's a couple narcissists that just love to look at themselves. Oh yeah, look at that. But like every time they especially players go to it, especially after they don't do the play right. What did I do wrong? Let me go see how to fix that. That's, adjustments are being made constantly through the game. So the idea of halftime adjustments, I don't
right. Think. And that's a great point, because I remember listening to that broadcast, and I've actually listened to a lot of people talk about that, and they are right. Like, they're not going, you know, like high school football team, they're going to all the players, hey, this is what we're going to change. They're not doing that per se, but I do think the staff gets together, or at least they're communicating. To your point, you're always adjusting, always looking at the last play, getting different views. And I think it's a quick little, hey, this we're going to try to do this in the second half. You know, it's not like, hey, we're drawing in the sand and coming up with new plays. They might just, hey, this was working, this wasn't, and just bouncing off of it. It's a communication thing more than anything, I would think. But, yeah, to the Manning's point, yeah, you're not doing that with the players. You have 12 minutes. Dude's got to use the bathroom, probably get some fluids in you, you know, retape, whatever, and you're back out on the field. So that's not going on with the players per se. But I do think the coaches are – really talking, and that's why you have staff that are trying to look at different things and different ideas. So when I say Andy Reid, I think it's, you know, him, but his staff is loaded with guys and they work well together.
Well, and I know Braden's talked about David Taub for years, the special teams coordinator, and you've seen like the team special teams have always been excellent. And guess what? A big punt return in this game. And like for the most part, this
rural history.
But yeah, exactly. Yeah. And for the most part, special teams have, you know, I felt like it was, you know, not one team is dominating the other, but all it takes is to break that one play to make a really big difference. And like you said, the longest punt return in NFL history. Way to go, Kadarius Toney.
Yeah,
Right,
and
it was Tony, right? I didn't mess that up.
No, you're right. Yeah, and to that point, they said, "Watch, we're gonna break one this game." Like he was adamant that we're gonna break one this game, and yeah, he didn't score, but that broke it open, right? That play, like total momentum shift. That's why there's three parts. Bill Belichick puts it into it. The Ravens do, and so do the Chiefs. You know, special teams matter.
So, and I agree with your point of the coaches will communicate. I think maybe one of the things is, okay, when we get to the second half, are we changing our philosophy, offense, defense, special teams? Like, are we going to change how we're approaching the game? And you're making like big philosophical decisions. But like you said, the X's and O's plays that you've, okay, now that we've chosen to change this philosophy, we already planned out what we do with our plays with that philosophy kind of before the game. They're not going to like invent a completely new way of thinking. Like, okay, they've probably planned out through the week and leading up to the Super Bowl through the 2 weeks. Okay, these are the scenarios. If we feel like we're down and we have to be more aggressive, this is how we're going to approach offense. This is how we approach defense. And like, that's probably the core of complementary football is the coaches communicating with each other. So good point there, Jesse.
Appreciate it. Yeah, that's, I mean, and I could be totally wrong. I've never been in a locker room, but that's just what it sounded like, you know, because that was a big topic what the Mannions were saying. So, yeah, that's why winners win. And, you know, it's, and getting off subject here and going down a rabbit hole, but you look at a lot of teams when they lose staff members, Green Bay this last year, and, you know, guys leave and guys get promoted, which great, you get promoted, but losing certain guys in certain spots, that really changes a lot. And the fluid, you know, being fluid with all the coaches, it matters. It really does.
Yeah, so that's a good point too. Although I'll say, I think if Devontae Adams on the Packers last year, I think they're in the playoffs. I'm not gonna lie. I think it really just came down to that. But that's, you know, another topic for last year, I suppose, because he's on the Raiders now. Yeah, another year. The truth is, Jesse, though, I think a lot of that coaching, we talk about Andy Reid, and one of the narratives that has been said about Andy Reid so much is how good he is at planning, how good he is coming off bye weeks. And now that it's his fourth Super Bowl, especially how good he is to like utilize 2 weeks to prepare. But from what the report on Twitter, and this is something that, like, you know, live, I would have thought, oh man, Andy Reid, I would have thought the same thing. This is Andy Reid just finding a way, like he saw how they're approaching the motion. Okay, you're gonna bite on that so hard, we'll use that against you. Apparently this was planned out before, and they had always kind of planned to, if we need to, we're not going to show this one right away because then that they will get time, but if we need to in the fourth quarter, like we need touchdowns, knowing how the Chiefs, we've been, you know, Andy Reid and the Chiefs and Mahomes, they've been behind it all three Super Bowls at halftime, so like we're probably going to need those in the fourth quarter, so let's use them then when the coaches really won't have time to change anything. And especially, like, again, I think it's less than 3 minutes apart of game time, which would be a little less than actual 3 minutes of real life time. But still, like, that's not a lot of time to get through and adjust that. But apparently the Eagles had months to adjust to this. And I think it's hilarious. The ultimate irony is that Doug Peterson actually gave the Chiefs, which I guess he was with Reed before, but he gave the Chiefs the key to beat the Eagles, the team he won a Super Bowl with as a head coach.
Isn't that crazy?
That exact play was run by the Jaguars against the Eagles, and I'm pretty sure the Eagles won that game as part of their unbeaten stretch to start the season. So that would have been like September, maybe October. You know, we're talking 4 months back, the same exact play where the genesis of the play is your outside receiver runs motion inside, almost like an end around. So the three players that scored touchdowns on these plays, the two Chiefs players in the Super Bowl, Kadarius Toney, the rookie Sky Moore, and then for the Jaguars, it was Jamal Agnew. Like all the impressive receivers they had this year, Christian Kirk, the big money they spent on him, Evan Ingram, both played amazing. Zay Jones really broke out, kind of made Marvin Jones almost, you know, forgettable. And back to the Aikman criticisms, the one game, you know, the Jaguars Titans game at the end of the season, it's like, okay, if I'm going to tolerate them for this, it's a play-in, win the division, I'll tolerate them through that. But first drive, Aikman said Marvin Jones has been Trevor Lawrence's blanket, like security blanket all season. You really don't know anything. Like he just doesn't research. I think that's all it is. We research it properly anyway. So but looking through Twitter afterwards, and some of the, you know, the beat reporters were saying about that play is that, you know, the receiver runs the motion, but they stop it short when the play is snapped, and they just run back outside. And the way the Eagles defense approaches it, it looks like that outside corner is the outside receiver, sorry, is not covered by the outside corner. whatever side the slot there's a slot receiver on, it looked like the corner basically goes up and almost plays press coverage against the corner or the slot receiver, sorry, corner playing press coverage against the slot receiver. And again, this is specifically their red zone defense and almost goal line defense, right? So they're going to approach that differently. They don't want that slot receiver getting free, easy access to the end zone. But so I think that's the reason they do it. But like you said, Jesse, there's always a key to a defense and a flaw, but the flaw is basically that outside receiver is covered by either, because it looks like they run three safeties. So two over the top half field essentially, and then the strong safety is an extra linebacker almost. So I would assume if the outside receiver just runs an outside route, the safety there will then cover them, come down and then take care of that. But if they've gone inside with motion, then the strong safety has to kind of approach it. And you know, seeing some replays of the play, you see whoever the strong safety is for the Eagles, I believe, kind of run that motion and run it too far and not see, I guess, you know, when the play snapped, the offensive lineman moving, you lose sight of the player. You assume they're still running the motion, but they're not, and they cut out and they don't see it in time. And that's how they end up wide open. Jamal Agnew did exactly that again, September, October, and the Chiefs, apparently Eric Bieniemy saw it when doing the research and planning. So like you said, Jesse, the staff around Andy Reid too. And Bieniemy found, the irony of it is Bieniemy finds this play against Jonathan Gannon's defense and exploits it completely, leads to two touchdowns in a 3-point game at the end. So again, I'd argue the biggest factor in that game. And he's not the one that gets hired by the Cardinals, the defensive coordinator whose scheme got exposed. That's the Cardinals though. Would we expect anything less? Probably not. So to me, back to my original point, I think the biggest difference was coaching, and we'll probably talk coaching changes in a couple of weeks because we always love to on the show. So that maybe it's a good preview and lead into that, right? Right, Jesse? I guess I'm almost getting really good at this.
Right. Yeah. It matters. Going back to it, you know, great breakdown, by the way. I'm not going to add more to it, but it's being prepared, seeing what works throughout the year. Like you said, they're going back months early in the season and finally, hey, let's put this in our pocket and use it when we need it. And they sat on it to when they needed it, when it mattered in the second half. It's brilliant to me. I love it. It's awesome.
And so, yeah, the earlier in the episode, Jesse, you mentioned you wanted to talk about the end of the game.
Well, I don't know if I want to, but I'm just kidding. I never place blame on refs and all that. I would have liked to see Philly get another chance. And my only thing I'm going to say, what was it, a penalty? Yes, by the rule, it's a penalty. 100% it is. I just hate that they got to be physical all game long. They let them play. And then in a crucial moment, again, it's the right call, but in a crucial moment, that flag comes out. It comes out really late. It's the right call, but I don't know. I think the offense is, this is just me personally, my biased offense is already favored so much that the defense is already kind of handcuffed. I don't think that changed that play. I just wish Philly would have got the ball with more time. And again, that's me being a selfish fan to see what if. But and it's not bad. That's the way it goes, right? It's just me being selfish as a fan sitting from a distance and, you know, one to see, hey, what if? Let's see more of this game because it was so great. But to end like that, and not even blaming the refs, just to have the game come down to that third down and then it ends like that kind of sucks overall, or takes the wind out of the sails, I guess. But again, to my point, it's the right call. If you go by the rule of that flag, it's the right call. It's just, you let them play all game, keep that flag in your pocket, but it is what it is.
Consistency of calls is important, I think, to a certain extent, and maybe consistency of refs as well. I think to your earlier point, this is one of the most exciting Super Bowls we've ever seen, but it didn't have the classic ending finish because of that, unfortunately. At least not the very last plays of the game, like last play mattering kind of thing. I mean, it did. You know, you try a Hail Mary at the end, but something a little more. That was a really deep Hail Mary. Like, I know he slipped when he threw it too, and I also felt like he kind of ran up, stopped, and then threw. Like whenever we've seen Rodgers do it so many times, it's he's throwing on the run up. Like he knows that just like he's got a really strong arm, maybe the strongest in the NFL. Just standing 60 yards away, I'm not going to hit the end zone. Running start, sure. I can get it high enough that trajectory velocity is going to get it there for sure. But you got to be on the run and throw it. Like that, I think that was maybe a thing that Hurts did, but also it seemed like the field was super slippery because that was a problem throughout the entire game. When it comes to reffing, I feel like I've harped on this for years. The biggest culprit when it comes to why the reffing is, you know, less effective, especially in the playoffs, is the NFL. And I suppose the way their bargaining agreement is done, this part of this blame has to also lie with the NFL Referees Union. But there's a really easy solution. So how it works, and one of the things that irks me is when people say, and you haven't said it, so like this isn't you, Jesse, it's certainly not targeting you, but when people say, oh, there's no accountability with the refs. I mean, there is accountability in the sense that every play is graded. Did you make the right call or not? And they'll determine that after the fact. And the highest graded refs will get the extra paychecks that come with reffing playoff games. Now, the biggest flaw is we don't make Pro Bowl all-star teams going into the Super Bowl. It's not like the Chiefs just go and take the best players off every other team. Because A, that would just get kind of stupid and ridiculous. But B, it also probably wouldn't work as well. You want the chemistry of having been on the team the entire season and the best teams get to the Super Bowl. That's how the refereeing should be done. The best officiating crew, because apparently they play so much important on consistency because the refs have the same crews from start of the preseason to the regular season. But then as soon as it matters the most, when it would be most important to have that chemistry in the playoffs, they switch it up and it's like all-star team refs and the best graded individual officials get each of those spots. Now, I understand the idea that the union wants the best graded officials rewarded. So what the NFL really should do is be less cheap and create an all-pro list for referees and officials, not just referees, the entire officiating crew. So however many spots that is it 8, 9 officials per game? Whatever it is, you've got 8, let's say it's 8, just to make a nice literally round number because it's 2 circles. But you've got 8 first team all-pro spots for officials, 1 at each position, second team, third team. And as part of your salary and payment, if you make any of those teams, maybe first team gets a bit more, second team a little less, and then third team a little less than that, but they get an extra bonus to their salary that makes up for the fact that if they were great individual officials, but their crew didn't grade high enough to make it to the playoffs, they wouldn't get access to playoff games. So you reward them that way. And then it gets their names publicized too, and it kind of puts them out there a little more. That's how it should be done. But then you maintain the crews. Who are the best graded crews? And you keep them throughout, and then you'll get better results. Now, this may be not necessarily a result of crew or not. This is really just one individual decision. But still, like I feel like that's kind of my rant. So the NFL just needs to step up. But of course, like they do with a lot of things, they just kind of fumble the ball way worse than Jalen Hurts did. I'll say that.
No, I'm on board with you. You know, when you mix, you work with the same group, you know, it's with anything, right? Anything in life. You get comfortable with the same group. You know how each other's working together. The best crew should be there, just like the best teams are there. And that's not a knock on any of these refs. They're, you know, they're great at what they do. But, yeah, when you get with a different group and work, it's different, right? To your point, biggest game of the year. And, again, you know, I'm not – was it the wrong call? No. But it goes all game, and they get to play all game. And then at the biggest moment, that comes out on something that – you let them play. That's me. But that's me. But to your point, you know, let the crew reward the crew that's been the best all year, you know, and that makes the group stronger overall, I think, because that you're building to do something each week to be the best crew. So that I'm with you 100%. Great point.
Because even through the playoffs, you're regrading. So the crews that worked wild card week aren't necessarily the exact same crews that are working divisional week either, and you're trimming down. So like even through the playoffs, you're rechanging crews every single week. So yeah, that needs to stop. But and we'll stop this topic here. So moving on now to Packers talk. Barely mentioned them. Yeah, I mentioned them a little bit. We got to complain about the defense and Joe Barry again. Oh yeah, he got retained. I guess the next time we talk will be coaching changes, but it won't involve the Packers because they just ran it all back. That's great. They may not at quarterback though. Now, you were saying there was a report that came out today that looks like the Packers have decided they are trading Aaron Rodgers. Now, last thing I heard was it was up to Rodgers. So this is, the wide range of reporting on this story is just massive, but it's always been the case, it seems like, with Rodgers for years. It's just one extreme to the other. I know that's generally how I tend to live my life because it's way easier than trying to balance things. That's difficult. But I don't know. To a certain extent, it's just been like crazy how people are just flying with narratives with Rodgers. makes you wonder, almost want to go into a darkness retreat from it all. But I don't know. What do we think we know, Jesse? I don't even know how to phrase it. Sorry.
Yeah. We don't want, before we even get to that, we know one thing, that Aaron Jones got restructured today, took a pay cut to be a Packer. That's a great person that you want in your locker room. He's a great human, great teammate, works his butt off. It looks like he'll be around for 2 more years. Obviously, we were not going to pay him what he was going to make this year on the cap. So that's awesome news. So we'll start there. That is what we do know, that did happen. So congratulations, Green Bay, Aaron Jones, who I don't know, a human being that wouldn't like that guy. He'll be around a little bit longer. So that is huge news there. Aaron Rodgers.
Well, to speak on that, Jesse, really quick. I remember checking Packers contracts a couple weeks ago and kind of looking at it. I think Jones was like fourth in terms of cap hit for this year, but none of the guys ahead of him could be cut to save really anything of significance. So like that was one where like, oh, we cut him, we saved 14 million or whatever it was. So it's like, ooh, yeah, like that's the easy one that you can, you know, he doesn't have much leverage to say, like, if he wants to stay, you're going to have to do this. Cause if not, we have to cut you. Cause we can't afford to, well, I guess, I mean, if they're trading Rodgers, they could maybe afford it then. But if, you know, if they're trading Rodgers, I suppose they believe in love. So they're not really going out after a quarterback, but I don't know. Either way, it probably is, you know, if we're thinking about cutting you this year, we'd certainly maybe consider it next year. So let's, you know, we'll give you a bit more, you know, help us out and we'll give you more long-term, it looks like. So I don't know with the exact details of like what his cap it's going to be this year released at all, or.
Not to hit yet. So it looks like they moved $8 million into a signing bonus. I think it hits like 11 million. So it cut it in half is what.
Yeah. I was going to say it was around 20. So yeah. If it's like 11 so something. Yeah. Half. Makes sense.
You know, and he's getting close to 30, or, you know, he had no leverage, to your point. He had none. He knew that it wasn't going to work like that. You don't pay running backs like that. When they made this contract, you know, what, 2 years ago, it essentially was a 2-year contract.
Yeah. We spoke about that, I think.
Right. Right. So, and it's great to get him back and he understands where he's at, and I'm happy as a Packer, man. That's a guy you want. It's hard not to cheer for, even if he was. It's kind of like Jamal Williams. I know he's a Lion. I know that's your nemesis team, but you gotta love Jamal Williams. That's a cool cat right there.
I mean, so he's about to be a free agent, so he may not be a Lion this year.
Hey, bring him back. Let's go. Just for fun.
But, Packers. Yes, I was gonna say Lions. No, but yeah.
No. Yeah. Green Bay.
Yeah. Gross. Lions. I mean, yeah, the Packers get their leading receiver back. He led the team in catches, not yards, of course. So that's important, regardless of who your quarterback is. So, no, I think that was important, necessary. But, yeah, go from one Aaron to another, I suppose. Unless there's anything else you want to say about Jones.
And like you said, you know, it's one extreme to the next, you know. But this is the Green Bay Packers, not the Green Bay Aaron Rodgers. Bob McGinn, who, take him what it's worth, but he's been – usually when he writes something about Green Bay, he's pretty close, or he's stepping in what he's talking about. Let's just say that. And he came out today with an article basically saying that Green Bay is done with Aaron Rodgers. It's Jordan Love time. It's basically what it says. They're disgusted with how Rodgers is right now and what's going on. Even if he does come back to, you know, that $59 million and not retire, it's not his job anymore. He's got to work for it. So it looks like a trade is coming. We can talk about our opinions on another one about this, but hey, in a crazy off season, like we thought the last 2 years and really no movement, but just a lot of talk. I really do think we're going to see something this year before the draft.
One thing I'll say is I'm way more disgusted with Brian Gutekunst's third round draft picking than anything Rodgers is.
What third round draft picks?
Well, none exactly. Of them exactly. You mean just trade them all. That's needs to be the Packers strategy. As long as he's the GM, always trade your third round pick. Cause anything you get for it will be worth more than what you pick. Cause you're basically
get a six for it.
Get 2 6, at least. Okay. You can justify having 2 pieces. Yeah.
There you go.
Two's better than one, right? Because you're right. Your third round pick's basically going to be a sixth round quality anyway. So
I'm with that is the black hole on day two in the middle of that draft. Third round has not been good in Green Bay for sure.
Could have had Amon Ross St. Brown and they took Amari Rodgers. Man,
oh, why are we reliving this?
Honestly, is that just because they took EQ the first time? Maybe they should just not taken him and they wouldn't have been tainted by the St. Brown, him not being good? I don't know. I mean, clearly Amon Ross is not his brother. He's so much better. But yeah, I guess that this episode has a lot of name value, doesn't it, then? Yeah, from Aaron and Aaron to Amon-Ra and Amari. Even our A game here today, Jesse, aren't we?
We're trying. Hey, we've had a little bit of a break, so let's give them an A game.
Yeah, we're not in mid-season form yet. This is still early season form. Yeah, technically, this is the start of the, again, not the start of the new year yet. New league year, anyway. So there were previous reports about the Packers, you know, trading Rodgers back when it seemed like it was less clear that they would, but it seemed to kind of entail they'd only want to trade him to the AFC. And that got me thinking, okay, if that is true, and you're literally cutting out half the league, like how many of the 16 remaining teams actually even want to trade for Aaron Rodgers? And then I kind of went through and realized there actually probably aren't that many. You know, I came up with eight teams. So again, literally cutting the AFC in half, because I felt like the other eight teams all have franchise quarterbacks established. And if they haven't been paid yet, you feel like those are coming, like a Joe Burrow, right? Like he hasn't had his supermax contract, as they call it in the NBA, yet, but that's probably coming. So like those teams aren't interested in Aaron Rodgers. And even of the eight, there were three that I almost kind of took out of those eight. Like, and I was thinking it's young quarterbacks that teams spent first round picks on. They've shown something, but like they're not Aaron Rodgers, and they may not ever be as good as Aaron Rodgers. So do those teams take shots on him? And I was thinking specifically Mac Jones with the Patriots and Kenny Pickett with the Steelers. I seriously doubt either of those team trade for Rodgers, right, Jesse?
I got two. So yeah, keep going. I don't think, I know the Patriots that talk, go be with Belichick, but I don't see it happening. I really don't.
I think they're committed to Mac Jones. I think honestly, I think everyone overblew him getting benched that game. I don't think he should have been starting that game. I think the Patriots don't think he should have been starting that game, but he insisted I'm playing this game, got in there and was just so bad because his ankle was so, like, you need your body parts to be functional when you throw the football, right? Like you're leaning on your ankle so much. And Patrick Mahomes is an alien. Like he's just a different breed. Mac Jones isn't Patrick Mahomes. Mac Jones can't play football on a high ankle sprain. Patrick Mahomes kind of can, apparently, but again, he's the best quarterback in the NFL. There's literally like no other quarterback can do the things he does. So at least of the quarterbacks playing right now, I've never saw Otto Graham. He might've been that amazing, but I don't know. It just seems like that was maybe really overblown, and that was, they benched him for his health. And cause like at that point, like if he's not healthy and be playing football, it's going to hurt himself more, but also the team, cause he really shouldn't be playing. So I think that's what that was about. I think they're committed to Mac Jones. And I think the Steelers, as soon as they made Pickett the guy, the only time Trubisky got starts this year or got playing time after Pickett was named the starter was because Pickett got injured. I think a couple of concussions, if I'm not mistaken, at least one. So I think those teams are committed there. The other team I was thinking, the Houston Texans. And I mean, they've got the 102 and the 112. And you'd imagine they have to at least move one of those picks to get Aaron Rodgers. And I mean, if the Packers, do they insist on the 102 just to be like, we want that. If we're really going with Jordan Love, we want to surround him with something, or that's the replacement quarterback. I doubt that the Packers go that way. It seems like they're committed to Love. And I don't think the Texans would want to give up the 102. Like they're probably committed to that quarterback. So that's why, like, I would say that eight shrinks to five suddenly. And you said you had two teams. So who are your two teams? Cause I'd assume they'd be on at least the list of five I have.
Okay. Well, I have four. I have two actually. Okay. So when they said that they prefer the AFC, they do. But if a team in the NFC, you know, comes calling and offers the world, you take it, right? Like if you are seriously moving on from Aaron Rodgers and you believe in Jordan Love, which it sounds like they do, they believe in Jordan Love. You take the best offer you're going to get. Now, like you said, Houston Texans, they're not ready to compete. Anybody that's taken Aaron Rodgers thinks that he is the piece that's going to get them to where they want to go. Why would you bring him in if you got a young team like Houston? Let's be honest. You're not winning next year. You're not winning the year after that, whatever you bring in. So as the AFC teams, the number one team, I think, so wow, deja vu, where Brett Favre went, the New York Jets. I think that team is that good, and I think they believe it too, where they're a quarterback away, which that defense can play with anybody. They have the running game. They have young receivers. The O-line, yeah, they got some pieces. You know, they can add to it. They're a quarterback away, and I really think they can push the Bills in the AFC East and the Dolphins too to be, you know, who knows what's going on with Tua. And that might be another team, but I think the Jets are the number one team. They've expressed that they want Aaron Rodgers. They're willing to give up first round picks for Aaron Rodgers. I don't know how true it is, but that's the talk. Aaron Rodgers loves Robert Saleh. I think that's a match made in heaven. Now, of course, New York market, that might be tough for Rodgers. I don't care. But if they offer the picks that we want to see, I'm making that move. The other one, I think they're crazy, and I don't think they're that close to being to win, especially in the division they're in. But the Raiders are also the other talk. Get them back with Devontae. Rodgers gets to go play with an offensive-minded coach, even though I think McDaniel's overrated, but that's another topic. But both of those teams with top 10 picks, if they're willing to deal, let's go. I think those are the only two teams that make the most sense to me in the AFC, because if they think they get Rodgers and they can compete, those are the teams.
For further thoughts on Josh McDaniels, refer back a year ago to the coaching changes episode. We had Terry on, Terry Biggs from the Full Press Raiders. That was great. That was actually a fantastic episode. People should, even if you don't want to hear about Josh McDaniels, want to hear about the other stuff, because we talked, I think we covered every head coach in the NFL that changed teams, all the new ones. And there was, I think, seven last year. So Terry did a really good job with that, covering that. I guess those were probably the two I had at the top of my list. Now, you said you had four. I think another really close third, and I think it's the opposite of the Raiders. This is the Jaguars did start to kind of take a, I mean, they won the division this year. They took a step forward, but I'm sure the Titans view themselves as competitors. And again, I hinted at this before, the Aaron Rodgers, Treylon Burks combo. I wanted it so bad last year, Jesse, remember that. And we might get it next year, but in Tennessee, not in Green Bay. So I think that's another team that dark horse could be. I think at the very least third on the list of likelihood to get Aaron Rodgers. I think those are the top three.
Good point. Yeah. I think that, yeah, that's a good one. I really didn't even consider that. And everybody said, oh, he bought, you know, bought a house in Nashville. So whatever, that's in there too, but no, that's a good one. Good point. I didn't even think about Tennessee, but yeah, it makes sense. It really does.
Just a little bit of pushback of what you said too. The New York market. See, I think Rodgers, call him a narcissist if you want. He seems like he likes the attention.
Oh, he does.
He is a quarterback too. They kind of, most of them do act like that, to be honest. It's not just a Rodgers thing, folks. Like, wake up to that. I think he'd love the New York media, like big media market like that, where he can talk even more in front of even more people. I think he'd love it.
I just think that fan base turns a lot harder than Green Bay, even right now, where I think it's split down the middle. We're pretty mild compared to how they treat their team up there. But hey, like you said, the quarterback, I'm full of myself thing, let him deal with that. That's not a Packer problem.
Jets, to be fair, seem to like Ryan Fitzpatrick that season because he was winning games. You start winning games, they'll love you.
Yep.
I'm sure people loved Zach Wilson last year when he was kind of looking good and they sort of started winning games. This year he was awful because he wasn't winning games. Like, it really does just come down to that, I think. So Rodgers goes in there and wins games, he's going to get a ton of – like, because the narrative will be, this is the best quarterback that's ever played for the Jets.
Right.
Because, I mean
– Namath wants some more 12.
I mean, to be fair, if Aaron Rodgers was traded to the Jets, he would be unquestionably the best quarterback that ever played for the Jets. Now, if he plays one season, it's tough to consider him the greatest, you know. Because I struggle with this as a Raptors fan. Can he really call Kawhi Leonard the greatest Raptor ever? He's probably the greatest Raptors player that's ever played for the franchise, but one season, as much as it was a championship season, I kind of feel like you have to default to Lowry as the number one Raptors player. He leads, you know, points in so many of the franchise. I know you like the basketball talk.
Hey, that title matters though, right?
hockey talk. Wayne Gretzky is the best player that's ever played for the St. Louis Blues, but he played like, I can't remember. There was a trade deadline. You know, you maybe played 20 games. And then I'm pretty sure they lost in the first round of the Red Wings in seven. I'm a Red Wings fan, so remember that. The Steve Yzerman sniped from the blue line to win it in overtime. So he ended up playing, like, maybe let's say 28 games for the Blues in his entire career. Really can't call Gretzky the greatest Blues player ever, even though he's the best player that's ever played for the franchise. So that could be the case with Rodgers here. But, again, he may not go to the Jets. So you said four. I have kind of two others that are maybe I would consider more the dark horse. Is that – more possible to me than Texans, Patriots, and Steelers, but less likely than the other three. But you had four, and it seemed like you were surprised by the Titans. So I'm curious to guess you have two other teams you're thinking of.
Well, they're total dark horses now, don't get me wrong, and they're NFC teams. So
okay, that's why I am thinking strictly AFC. But okay, yeah, let's hear the NFC teams.
Yeah, I mean, just totally crazy because I think the division's a dumpster fire, and it's not going to happen. Trust me, it's not. But there's been rumblings. I think it's Carolina and Atlanta. I think both of them are they good? No, but I think there's some nice pieces there, especially Atlanta and that offense and those young receivers and tight end. Yeah, they got to fix the defense, but both teams have money. Why not, right? You can win that division with you win that division with 8 wins. Put Aaron Rodgers in the mix, you're going to win your division. Especially, you know, with Tampa Bay, you know, with everything that's happened there and the Saints too, which Saints are got some talent, but I just think they're in limbo. So it's not going to happen. Don't get me wrong, but I was just looking at it, you know, Atlanta might be like Rodgers thrown to some of these big target, you know, wide receiver tight end combos. Might be appealing, but it's not going to happen. That was my two NFC dark horses that might offer some stupid stuff. And Green Bay says, hey, have them.
Well, and I think, Jesse, those two tie to one of the other teams I think could trade for Rodgers, because I think both Carolina and Atlanta are all in to get a quarterback this offseason. But yep. I think Rodgers is priority number two behind Lamar Jackson.
Agreed.
But I think whatever team loses out on Lamar Jackson, if he is in fact traded to one of those teams, and they would be a division rival of that other team, you have to think that team will then up the ante to go get Rodgers just to keep up. They can sense no Tom Brady in the division anymore. And heck, maybe the Bucks, maybe you look at all three of those teams thinking they were a quarterback away. Let's go and trade the haul to get that quarterback. But yeah, I think Atlanta, Carolina, because it seems like those are the two that are really tied to Lamar Jackson. If, you know, whoever loses out on him might be desperate enough to make it like a pay as much as it costs to get Jackson to then go get Rodgers. Maybe the Green Bay, the Packers use that. Okay, well, this is what it costs to get a franchise quarterback. And you don't have to like negotiate the contract with him. He's already under contract. You've got, you know, like you save yourself that hassle. Then you sell it that way as like whatever it costs Jackson, you know, pay us. You know, you want to keep up with your division rival. I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe the cost won't be the same. But it ties to the dark horse AFC team. If the Ravens trade away Lamar Jackson, do they go for Aaron Rodgers? Now, part of me thinks no, because it seems like the reason they don't want Jackson is for the giant cap hit at quarterback. They'd rather build with a cheaper quarterback, however they could acquire that. So it probably won't happen. And one other team, Jesse, that's an AFC dark horse. I guess it's funny because they're a division rival of the Texans, and it could fall into the similar pitfall of they pick so early in the first that they may have their sights set on a rookie quarterback, and that's how they're just going to go. Especially this franchise, which has just bounced from old quarterback to, well, Carson Wentz, but then old quarterback afterwards. Like, you know, and they've been kind of blindsided by two quarterbacks retiring on them in the last, what, 6 years? 5 years? 19? Yeah, 4 years. I mean, it's been bad for the Colts in that sense, right? But then again, it's the team that's just gone after old quarterback. Almost like, why did they go after Matt Ryan this year? Like, did they not watch him play last year? Because nothing I saw from Matt Ryan this year looked any different than it did in 2020, honestly, or 2019, or he's been kind of taking the Drew Brees path of he's declining. Like, it's pretty clear. Like this, you know, and I may not, he may not have ever been that great anyway. Just when he was in a Kyle Shanahan system, he looked amazing. But other than that, I mean, really, you know, one seed occasionally, but. Has any team done less with the one seed than the Falcons, honestly, ever throughout their entire history? That's another question for another time. Sorry to rip on the Falcons, who might get Aaron Rodgers. But anyway, I'm throwing through a lot of loopholes here. I'm kind of not making sense, and I'm kind of just all over the place. Sort of like Jim Irsay, right? Like that's the one owner that maybe looks at Rodgers as, and you're like, you bring Rodgers in and it doesn't change how much stranger your franchise is in, because you already have Jim Irsay owning the team. You like, it's already the Wild West there anyway, so you may as well just bring Rodgers in, and it's not any more of a distraction than that team already is. So from that sense, it's fine. Again, do the Packers insist on the 104, I think, which is what the Colts have, the fourth overall pick in the NFL draft. So do they insist on that as part of that price? Maybe Irsay gets drunk enough, or, you know, maybe he's doing drugs with Rodgers somewhere. Sure, let's give the Packers the 104.
Right, maybe put them in a dark room together.
So it's probably I think it's a more likely dark horse than the Ravens, because it seems like the Ravens are, they're not going to make irrational, like crazy decisions Like so they probably aren't going to do it. So maybe the Colts are a favored fourth team for me to land Rodgers after I mentioned earlier the division rival, the Titans, and the top two, which I think I tend to agree with you in a certain sense as being that the maybe the top two, just because there's been smoke about either the Raiders and Jets. But man, I kind of feel Tennessee. I don't know. I'm feeling like it's just as likely as those other two. So we'll have to see the Aaron Rodgers saga. I don't know if the Packers want to trade him. I bet it happens quickly. If it's, you know, because if it's him wanting to come back or not, then it's, I think that gets dragged out more. I don't know. Maybe he doesn't want to play football anymore. I think maybe that is where everything is kind of hinging right now. I'm not sure. We'll keep you posted as we find out all the crazy, weird happenings that is the Aaron Rodgers saga. Certainly gives us good podcast material. Like,
can't
complain too much, right?
Yeah, I'm sure we'll have a whole different story next week after he comes out of his dark room. So stay tuned, right?
And I do want to say one thing. Of all the – and all – okay, so I am a self-professed and self-identifying weirdo. So when I say this, I am do mean this almost in a term of endearment. Aaron Rodgers is a freaking weirdo, man. I love it. I love it. I love it. It's amazing. You know, some stuff is so weird that's okay. I think that's weird. Other stuff, it's like, okay, no, that's conventionally considered weird, but I think it's cool. So yeah, man, he's a weird dude. But the idea of going into like, you know, unplugging from all electronics, maybe to the extreme of, you know, total darkness for 4 days, you know, that's a little weird. Taking it to the extremes again, talk about extreme stories, right? I suppose that's how it is reported. But to a certain extent, that Aaron Rodgers lives on the extremes. But I think that idea is maybe being ridiculized a little too much. I think it is healthy to kind of just unplug and step away. And I don't know if the Packers are disgusted that Rodgers just doesn't want to talk to them right now. Like, you know, that is his right. Like he's not working. You don't have to make this trade right now. You know, the biggest decisions they should have been focused on were, you know, better defensive coordinator, for instance, but no, they chose to just focus in solely on this. I don't know, Green Bay. I don't know what's going on. I don't know what's going to happen, but, the weird case of the Green Bay Packers is that never ends. It's I mean, really, it's probably the weirdest sports franchise in North America. Like the city it's in, how small of a media center it is, the fact that it's locally owned. There's so much about the Packers that are just weird because it's not normal to any other team in North America and across all sports. So I embrace the weird. Sorry if you don't, because you have to hear me talk weird for a lot. But Jesse's here to rein us back to normalcy and reality. So go ahead, Jesse.
I don't think, I'm not very normal myself either. So, hey, the man marches to the beat of his own drum, right or wrong, whatever. I to your point, I really don't care what he does in his personal life. Is it weird? Yeah, it's weird. Whatever. Good for him. But going forward, I want someone that wants to be here, wants to be a Packer. This is a young team. I'm ready for the Jordan Love era. As the world turns in Green Bay, it's going to be an exciting offseason, whether you like it or not. So stay tuned, and we're all on this ride together, right?
I knew I liked you. I knew you were a weirdo too, somewhat. Sorry if you're not. but no, I appreciate you coming back, Jesse. Now we'll be here all the way. I'd imagine 2 weeks from now, we probably have enough data that we can talk fully. I guess all the NFL head coaches have been hired. So I think that's probably a good topic for our next episode, is it not?
Yeah, sounds good. Let's go right into it. A lot of new signings, a lot of new faces and new places.
Yeah, because, I mean, you know, and of course, if there's any Aaron Rodgers news, we'll, of course, talk about that as well. But a couple weeks after talk coaching, we're already getting into basically new league year and almost time for free agents to be signed. So, yeah, lots to talk about in NFL offseason. And glad to be here with you every step of the way. Of course, you can follow us on Twitter at @FPC_Packers. I'm on Twitter at Center Says. Jesse's also on Twitter at Hall_JHall1212. See, I kind of delayed because like, gotta remember numbers, words and numbers. I love numbers, but sometimes I get confused. But yeah, I think I nailed it, right?
You did. You nailed it.
Okay. Yeah, it took the extra second. Sometimes you need, you know, just slow down for a bit. I overtalk sometimes and rush through things. But yeah, again, at Center Says, at Hall_JHall1212, at @FPC_Packers. Also, one last account, at @PA_II_official, and that's PA the second, who graciously lets us use the new song "Bad Boy Outside" as our intro and outro music. So, new single released just at the end of 2022. I think at that point, when he released it, the Packers were still alive for a playoff push. That actually might have been that might have been in the dreads of the long winning losing streak when we thought it was hopeless. That might have been when they started winning, though. I can't remember that. Or that might have been a bye week. Anyway, I'm rambling again. I'm being bad. But again, check out Bad Boy Outside and all of the other great songs by PA the Second. Again, on Twitter at PA underscore II official. Any final thoughts, Jesse, for the listeners?
Hey, just because football games are over with, I am full diving into the offseason with NFL prospects. You got the combine coming up. Just got done with the Senior Bowl. We got a lot to talk about. This is a fun time of year for me. So go Pack, go.
Well, and I'll just plug an upcoming article, probably, I guess maybe it depends on how late you're listening to this before the next episode. Maybe it's already out, but I would say at the time of recording this, and we are recording this on February 17th, Friday, I would say within a week, my film analysis for the running backs in this class, the top 25 anyway, will be published. So check for that. My first step in my running back evaluation, specifically for fantasy football, of course, that is the covet there. But a lot of my film evaluation is who do I think are the best, most talented running backs. So check out the article. I'll have a table set up with all 25, their overall grades, and then the four main categories I look at. I'll also kind of explain how I view those categories, and within that talk about some specific players to kind of exemplify the things I'm looking for and players I think excel at it. So if there's anyone who likes NFL draft and prospects, that might be a fun read anyway, but certainly the purpose is geared towards fantasy football, but that might again be a fun read for even those who aren't so into fantasy football as I am. I'm a little obsessed. But yeah, thanks, Jesse, for reminding me that. You know, give me the opportunity to plug that. And because I rambled on enough, I'll let you have the final word again.
Hey, go Pack, go.
Love hearing that. We're back. And we'll be back again in a couple weeks on the Full Press Packers Pod.